This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Rhys Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A good friend of mine, the co-host of the show we do, ran into one of the guys on the Mammoth Project recently. Met him at a bar. And it was like, what do you do for a living? Well, actually, it's kind of interesting.
So right in your backyard, there's a company working to bring back not only the woolly mammoth, but the Tasmanian tiger and the dodo bird. Colossal Biosciences is the name of the company, and it's based in the Dallas area. It recently received a $200 million investment to work on this Jurassic Park adjacent project.
That's right. But instead of harvesting long lost DNA like they do in the movies, Colossal is planning to take living species and then genetically engineer traits of the extinct animals into them. It's like a hybrid. The company, it currently employs about 170 scientists, and plans are moving forward faster than you might think.
Faye Flam, a science columnist for Bloomberg Opinion, who has been on the show before to talk about brain chips with us, she actually reached out to me about this story. She's working on an article about it. Even before I knew that your coworkers were hobnobbing with the Colossal team at local bars. But when she told me that she was researching it, I knew we would have to have Faye on the show to talk about it, because this is definitely very offbeat.
It's crazy. We talked about the project and its potential implications. And by the way, that is one of our producers, Lauren. I'm your host, Mike Rogers. This is Something Off Beats. Tell us how you first heard about this story. How did that happen?
Well, I had been following talk about cloning mammoths and other extinct species for probably 20 years. Scientists had been talking about it. You know, after they cloned Dolly the sheep, I think people started talking a lot about, well, what can we do with this technology that could make a lot of money? And the two things that really came out of that were cloning people's pets and attempting to clone extinct species. And that seemed like it was on the back burner for a long time. And then a few weeks ago, a news story cropped up saying that this company, Colossal Biosciences, was now worth about $10 billion and had some new infusion of a couple of $100 million in investments. So suddenly it started to seem like somebody had the resources that they could really pull this off.
Yeah, they did. They got a big infusion of capital. I remember hearing about that. And now they're focused on the woolly mammoth, the dodo bird, and to help me with the pronunciation, it's the Tasmanian tiger, but it's the thylacine.
Thylacine, I think. It's an odd pronunciation. I was just going to say Tasmanian tiger.
So the woolly mammoth. Let's talk about that. That's the first one. That's the one they're focused on right now. How long has the woolly mammoth been extinct?
Well, the heyday of the woolly mammoth was apparently about 20,000 years ago. And its numbers started to decline precipitously around 10,000 years ago. The last ones are thought to have gone extinct about 4,000 years ago. So it had a big decline, which coincided with the end of the Ice Age and people suddenly appearing in the mammoth territory.
And I know the dodo bird, that's actually more recent. I think that it was only like the 1600s. There was, you know, interesting story with the Portuguese sailors stopping off at that island and eating them into extinction, literally.
Right, right. So that was in, you know, in recorded history that those went extinct, and they had the bad luck to be flightless and apparently taste good. So almost did not stand a chance against humans.
Of course, I've heard of the dodo bird before, but I didn't know this backstory you mentioned about the sailors, so I had to look it up. According to Harvard, the dodo was discovered, by Europeans at least, when Dutch sailors traveled to the island of, you're better at pronouncing stuff,
Mauritius.
Mauritius. Okay, I knew I wasn't going to get it right. In the late 1500s, since it didn't have any predators on the island, the dodo lost its ability to fly. So that's the setup. Can you fill us in on what happened from there?
Right. So the Dutch and the Portuguese, too, they were doing a lot of trading in East Asia at the time, what's now China, Japan, and it required them to cross the Indian Ocean. Well, that's a very long and difficult journey, and Mauritius was a great stopping point to kind of rest up and resupply. You think about this, those ships come up on that little island. You got dozens, if not hundreds, of hungry sailors pouring off the ships. And there were those poor dodo birds who had never seen humans before. They just walked right up to them. And the sailors just slaughtered them and ate them for food. The dodo bird was literally eaten into extinction.
Harvard noted that the island didn't have any mammals on it until the explorers arrived there. So in addition to the humans eating them that you mentioned, there were also, you know, bird-eating pigs, cats, dogs, and rats that came along and contributed to the dodo disappearing.
The poor dodo.
And they're so cute, at least from the drawings.
And I don't know the first thing about the Tasmanian tiger, except it's from Tasmania. So let's talk about the science here. What is the process, as you understand it, what is the process that has been proposed to bring these creatures back?
Well, it's very interesting because, you know, with the pets and with Dolly, they had full DNA from live animals to clone. And here, there are no live mammoths. There are no live specimens of these animals. But the mammoth, they do have a number of frozen mammoths that have been recovered. And there's some mammoth DNA, enough that they think they can use this really, you know, this technique that's become extremely popular, gene editing, to mix in some of the mammoth genes in with DNA from an Asian elephant. And Asian elephants are the closest living relatives of the woolly mammoth. And apparently they're quite similar in the same way that we and chimpanzees share some 98% of our genes.
So if it works and they're able to do this, would the resulting animal be kind of a cross between an elephant and a woolly mammoth?
That's what some of the scientists are saying. In fact, if you look at a lot of the critics, they say, well, it's going to be sort of a mammoth-like animal. It can't really be a mammoth because it would be gestated in the body of an elephant. It would the DNA that they would put together would go into the egg cell of an elephant, and it would be elephant DNA that had been edited. So it might look like a woolly mammoth. It wouldn't really be the resurrection of an extinct species.
Wonder what they would do with the dodo and the Tasmanian tiger if they would find similar animals now and do the same kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the dodo. The Tasmanian tiger, actually, the last living one was in a zoo, I think, in the 1930s. So it was a very recent extinction, and they may have recent DNA tissue samples that they can use. The dodo, I don't know exactly how they're going to go about that. That one is a trickier one, though it seems like a more practical one to bring back than this gigantic animal.
There aren't too many birds around right now that look like a dodo. I don't know what you do with that one. And the Tasmanian tiger the name is tiger because of the stripes, but this is actually a dog, isn't it?
It's a marsupial. It's a carnivorous marsupial. It is native to that region where all of the mammals are marsupials. So very interesting animal, and one that might be reasonable to bring back since it was a recent extinction and maybe has enough DNA left from the last survivors.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
A marsupial, so closer to a koala or a kangaroo, I was sort of picturing it as one of those famous man-eating lions that I'm really fond of.
You're fond of them, are you?
Yeah, well, they're at the Field Museum here in Chicago where I live, and they have been there for 100 years. This year is the anniversary. They're stuffed lions, of course, and they're kind of a fan favorite for all the kids that go to the Field Museum on field trips and stuff. KRLD's Odyssey sister station in Chicago, WBBM News Radio, just published an article about them, and an expert said that the stuffed lions should probably last another 100 years on display there.
Sad to say, that may be longer than real lions survive.
Yeah, that's true. However, I wouldn't want to see these man-eating lions actually come back to life. I'm not too fond of the idea of getting eaten by a lion. Are there any animals that you would want to stay extinct?
Well, along a similar vein, as cool as it was to see them in the movies, I can probably live without raptors coming back. If anyone gets that Jurassic Park idea, that whole thing, that might be one that could lead to some buyer's remorse. Just like in the movie.
Agreed.
What do you think? Is this a good idea, or is this going to go sideways like it did in Jurassic Park?
Well, you know, I think that the science fiction movies always have to have people getting killed for dramatic reasons. But in this, you know, I think one of the overlooked dangers here is really the welfare of the animals. And I think that was something that came up a lot when pet cloning was popular, that there were things that would be considered by some people to be abuses of the animals that were forced to have their eggs extracted, and the animals that were commissioned to gestate the clones. Also, Dolly had some health problems. They may not come out healthy. It's also not clear the mammoths would be able to live in the environment they were adapted to live in. They ran in herds. They had a lot of space. There is a place in Siberia where they might be able to be released, a preserve called Pleistocene Park, but it's just not clear that this would be good for the welfare of the animals themselves.
Now, I thought she was joking at first, but Pleistocene Park, that is a real proposal from Colossal, and you can even read about it on the company's website.
I've read this, that they're hoping this project bears fruit by 2027. That's only 2 years away. That seems really ambitious.
It does, and yet they have the resources to do it, and the technology. I think this gene editing technology may have really turned a corner for them, because now they can take the DNA from an existing animal, an African elephant, and edit in these genes. It's, you know, and it's also hard to say what will happen behind the scenes, whether they could have some failed attempts or stillbirths. And that's where the ethics comes in, you know. And one of the people I talked to when I was writing the column about this was a medical ethicist, Arthur Kaplan. And he was very concerned about the same thing. You know, what's going to go on behind the scenes with the welfare of these animals? And if they're, you know, they're willing to sacrifice sacrifice a certain number of animals, then the progress could be faster. But is that really what the public would want?
That's the big ethical question. Just because you can do something doesn't necessarily mean you should do it. The whole tampering in God's domain thing.
It's partly that. It's partly just that we might see that when they finally create a healthy baby mammoth, that's what people will see. They won't see all the ones that died before that. They may have to do some experimentation to get it right. And so we may not know what they're up to before they actually get one they can show us because it's healthy and running around and looks good.
If they do get it right, and there was a herd of mammoths running around, or dodo birds, or Tasmanian tigers, would you pay money to go see that? I would. I'd be first in line.
Yeah, I would. I think it would be quite interesting. Yeah, I think it would certainly be fascinating. And I think that they have rightly said that they will learn things from this technology that might be useful for more serious conservation efforts, animals that we're about to lose.
Yeah. Next question. Other applications of this. You could not only bring animals back from the dead, you could save ones that are on the bubble.
It's possible. I mean, I think that one of the things that would be really interesting to do would be to have a sort of open discussion with the scientific community about what types of animals or plants or fungi would be useful to bring back. And, you know, we're sort of getting the ones that would be most entertaining because that'll make them money. But what might be helpful? Would there be maybe some species of plant that would be important for diversity in our food supply, or something that would be that was recently extinct that was important for some environmental reason? So I think having an open discussion with the scientific community would be really interesting to see where this technology might prove to be useful for all of us, not just for entertainment, but for the health of the planet.
All right, now we've talked about what we wouldn't want to bring back, but I know what I would like to see again. There's two species, actually. The megalodon, you've heard of this, right? This is a giant shark that used to swim in the primeval seas, I mean, like 10 times the size of a great white. And there is an animal, and you need to look this up. Check this out. It's called the Irish elk. Go ahead and Google that and look at the pictures.
I'm going to look at it right now, actually. I'm going to Google it myself.
You'll see, and you'll go, man, that is awesome. I would love to see one of those things walking around again.
Oh, that's very majestic.
Isn't that great?
The antlers are so cool.
It's incredible.
Yeah, I'd like to see one of those too.
How about you? What else?
Well, Mike, mine might seem kind of boring compared to the woolly mammoth and compared to this beautiful Irish elk. But do you remember when we did the episode about avocados possibly going extinct?
I do.
Trying to cut down on avocados since that episode has been hard. I love them. And if there was a way that I could go in and save them, prevent them from disappearing or make that more ecologically friendly, that's what I would do. I'd save the avocado.
And you know what? At the rate we're going, eggs might be in trouble too.
That's true.
Now let's ask Flam. What about other extinct animals? Just for fun, hypothetical, what would you like to see him bring back besides these three?
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Those are kind of everybody's favorite, aren't they?
Well, I'm like, how about a big saber-toothed tiger?
Maybe. You know, the passenger pigeon might be an interesting one because those lived everywhere. And they apparently were, you know, beautiful birds that people just, you know, they had the misfortune of tasting good and people killed them until there weren't any left. It might be really interesting to see, a flock of passenger pigeons come back.
Okay. So we're talking about saber-toothed tigers, passenger pigeons. What about species more closely related to humans? What about Neanderthals?
Yeah, that's one that people have talked about. I think it would be the most fascinating because we've never encountered another species of human before. And we know that we did coexist with them at one point. Also, probably the most ethically fraught of all of those and least likely to happen. But I'm sure we would learn a lot about ourselves and our past if we could have a Neanderthal come back and talk to us. And it would be absolutely enticing, but also probably totally unethical.
I'm Mike Rogers. Thanks so much for listening to Something Offbeat. This episode written and produced by Lauren Barry and Chris Blake, with audio editing by Chris Blake and original music by Myron Kaplan. And to keep listening, please subscribe to us on the Odyssey app, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And listen, share your great ideas with us. If you've got your own offbeat story that you think we should cover, let us know about it at somethingoffbeat@Audacy.com.